Thank you very much.
Unlike Nick, I have no knock-knock jokes. Economists tend to not be very funny, and central bankers who are economists are even less funny, so I'm not even going to try. But what economists are good at is looking at data, and I am going to have some charts, so if you're situated in a way that you can't see one of those two screens, you probably want to move your chair around a little bit so that you will be able to see some of the data that I'll be talking about. No equations, a few graphs. I think it'll be pretty straightforward, but it's worth actually being able to see the visual. I'm very pleased to be at this important event focused on the year ahead. I particularly want to thank Jim Smith. He's always very generous in his introductions. He's a very thoughtful person. He's been very helpful serving on our board. I really appreciate his government service. It is very useful to have the kind of perspective that he provides on our board. And I'd also like to thank the CBIA and the Metro Hartford Alliance. Pete and Oz do a wonderful job with this event. Every time I've participated, I've been very pleased that I got the opportunity to do so. And once again, I'm pleased to have the opportunity to share my perspectives with you here today. As we begin a new year, financial markets are in a much better state than they were a year ago, something several speakers have already talked about earlier this morning. Interest spreads reflecting a panic premium on risk have narrowed to more normal levels. Markets have resumed much more normal trading patterns, and the Federal Reserve is likely to be able to wind down many of its emergency lending facilities without any adverse impacts as soon as next month, as the Federal Open Market Committee affirmed in its statement last month. But despite the improvement in financial conditions, the recovery in the real economy has proceeded more slowly, with the declines in the first half of 2009 turning to slow but positive growth in the third quarter and what appears to be stronger growth in the fourth quarter. This is resulting in part from firms less aggressively cutting inventories as their sales prospects improve. In sum, it seems to me that growth will be positive, but slow enough that unemployment remains much higher than I would like. I would be happy if in hindsight it's clear I've been too pessimistic, but as I see it, the economy faces three significant headwinds. First, while the banking crisis has passed, banking problems remain. Most economies that experience significant banking problems have been slower to recover, and that is likely for the United States this time. Loans and banks have declined over the past several quarters, as many businesses are constrained by their balance sheets and reluctant to take on new debt. Many banks are also concerned with their balance sheets, and particularly their capital ratios, and have restrained their terms of lending to avoid taking on too much additional risk, given that they are still working through problems with existing loans. Second, consumers and businesses will likely remain cautious, which is consistent with positive but slow growth. Consumption will continue to be subdued as consumers are fully aware that housing prices are well off their peak, unemployment rates remain high, and home foreclosures, while abating in some places, are still continuing. Consumer caution and the desire to rebuild savings will likely result in some increase in the savings rate, which is, of course, good in the long run, but dampens growth in the short run. Many businesses seem likely to only gradually expand investment, at least until they are more confident that the economy will continue expanding even after some of the stimulative government support winds down. Also, many businesses may be limited in how much external funding they can raise. The third headwind involves the fact that this recession has been quite severe and quite broad in its ramifications for labor markets. Workers become discouraged and leave the labor force, while the skills of workers that are unemployed for long periods of time may atrophy. And new entrants in the labor market often have to settle for jobs at levels below what would have been offered in a more robust economy. Indeed, to most Americans, economic prospects are better measured by an expansion of jobs rather than growth in GDP. So I'd like to spend the rest of my time with you today reviewing some of the patterns we have seen in the labor markets during early stages of recoveries. Of course, given the severity of this recession, consumer and business behavior this time may be somewhat more constrained than in past recoveries. To reveal a bit of the punchline, my conclusion from the analysis I'm about to walk through are that the employment response in the last two recoveries, which was slower than it was in the two earlier recoveries in the 70s and 80s. And unfortunately, the financial headwinds, lingering labor market problems, and a cautious attitude of consumers and businesses in the wake of the financial crisis make it likely that recovery in employment terms will also be slow this time. Unfortunately, I expect a rather slow recovery in output and a rather slow recovery in employment given the level of output growth. And I'll explain why in a minute or two. But since unemployment is so fundamentally important, I think it's good to study our labor markets and earlier recovery periods so policymakers, businesses, and workers can anticipate and adapt to the experience as we're likely to see it. In addition, I would note that during the early phases of a recovery, improvements in unemployment tend to lag those in the economy. But the strength of the recovery is partly dependent on how confident businesses and consumers are becoming that the economy will be able to grow fast enough for tangible progress in labor markets and the recovery will become more self-sustaining. So allow me to walk through a few slides that help illustrate employment patterns in the first years of the recovery. GDP growth in the just completed fourth quarter of 2009 looks like it will prove to have been stronger than in the third quarter, a result largely driven by businesses bringing their significant inventory drawdown to a close. As shown in Figure 1, this is not unusual in the first year of a recovery. Consider the following logic. The difference between real GDP and final sales, shown in this graph, is the change in inventories. In the first year of the recovery from the four previous recessions, real GDP grew faster than real final sales. This shows how the normalizing of inventories has been an important source of economic growth in the early stages of most recoveries. The figure shows that the smallest inventory response was in the recovery in the early 1990s. Since inventories are often bank financed, so-called headwinds provided by the troubles in the banking system that result in credit constraints are unfortunately a potential source of restraint on inventory replenishment now, as then. Indeed, research I have done with colleagues Joe Peek and Jeff Tutel confirmed that inventory buildup tends to be more restrained during periods of significant banking problems. Thus today, as in the early 1990s, inventory levels became quite low during the recession as businesses prepared for the worst. And I expect that inventory buildup will be an important source of growth, but also that it will likely be more restrained than one might have otherwise expected because of tighter credit conditions. Figure 2 shows that the past two recoveries did not feature job growth in the first year of the recovery, as Nick highlighted, in sharp contrast to the recoveries in the 1970s and 1980s. The past two recessions had positive economic growth in the first year of the recovery, but it was not rapid enough to generate job growth. In contrast, in the recoveries in the 1970s and 80s, growth was sufficient to yield employment growth in the first year of the recovery. Figure 3 illustrates another pattern typical of recoveries. While there has been a long-standing downward trend in the average weekly hours of production workers, it is common for average hours to decline more steeply during a recession. Note that in a prolonged recession, where the shading is the widest, average weekly hours decline more significantly as workers are placed on shortened work weeks. As the economy begins to recover, businesses will restore the hours of such workers before hiring additional new workers. Note that in our current recession, there was a significant decline in the hours of production workers, which are just beginning to show signs of a rebound. Another harbinger of a recovery in employment is growth in temporary services. Firms often extend work weeks and hire temporary workers before committing to hiring permanent workers. As Figure 4 highlights, the use of temporary workers fell dramatically during the recession, but has been rebounding more recently. Of course, temporary jobs reduce the unemployment rate and provide a needed bridge for workers looking for work, but not yet finding the more permanent employment. But when businesses become more confident of the strength of the recovery, they will begin to hire permanent workers rather than rely on temporary workers. Now I'd like to explore with you some of the labor market dynamics that will likely restrain employment growth in this recovery. The severity of a recession can have a significant impact on how quickly firms resume hiring. As figure 5 shows, this recession has been quite severe in a number of respects. This recession was much longer than typical, making it difficult for those that lost their jobs to find new employment opportunities. Research has highlighted the fact that workers that have been unemployed for extended periods can have significant difficulty being rehired. It may be that their skills atrophy, or just that their sector of the economy is particularly hard hit. And potential employers may worry about the underlying reasons for the long unemployment spell. As shown in the figure, currently the percentage of the unemployed who have been out of work for 27 weeks or more is much higher than in previous recessions at just under 40%. This is likely to be one impediment to our seeing significant, speedy declines in the unemployment rate. The next set of challenges is related to the lack of business confidence that I cited earlier. Businesses are most likely to hire new workers when they are confident that their sales and orders will increase significantly for an extended period of time. Absent this confidence, businesses have at their disposal several alternatives for deploying more labor without incurring all the costs entailed in new hires. The first of these alternatives is reflected in the blue line in Figure 6. Roughly 6% of the labor force is working part-time for reasons related to the economy. Such a high percentage of workers being placed on part-time work schedules is, as you can see in the figure, much higher than in the previous two recessions and was last at these levels in the 1980s. Many workers reflected in these data had their schedules reduced to part-time because employers wanted to retain them but did not have sufficient work to keep them on full-time. Before an employer is likely to do any significant new hiring, they will usually return these workers to full-time work. While that defers new hiring, it does, of course, mean additional income for the worker. A second alternative to permanent hires is evident in the data for weekly overtime, which declined quite significantly during this recession, as shown in Figure 7. Businesses frequently will not only restore the aforementioned workers to full-time status, but also begin incurring overtime before making the investment in new hires. While there has been some rebound in overtime work, you can see in the figure that it remains well below pre-recession levels. A final alternative to employment growth is improving the efficiency of the existing workforce. In recent quarters, employers have found ways to produce more goods with fewer workers. While a more productive workforce is very good news for the economy in the long run, it lessens the need for hiring in the short run. The combination of these labor market challenges and the headwinds from problems in the banking sector make it quite likely that the unemployment rate will decline only gradually. While layoffs are subsiding, in some it seems that new hiring is likely only after employers more fully utilize existing employees. Now I'd like to share some thoughts on various industries and recoveries. Figure 8 shows the changes that have occurred in the industrial mix of employment over the past 30 years. Overall, much less of the workforce is employed in manufacturing, which has fallen from 21% of the workforce to only 9% of the workforce now. The two areas that have increased significantly are professional and business services and education and health services, both areas that have tended to be less responsive to economic downturns. Given the difficulties in predicting overall employment trends going forward, it is even more difficult to determine which industries are likely to be engines of growth. However, it is instructive to see which industries in the past have tended to grow in the first year of a recovery. Figure 9 shows 4 industries that have tended to perform well in the first year of a recovery: professional and business services, education and health services, leisure and hospitality, and to a lesser extent, government. The first 3 areas that have increased their share of total employment and all have tended to be less sensitive to economic downturns. While it's quite possible that these areas will grow in the initial stages of the recovery, that growth is likely to be restrained by various forces. In education and health services, there is the matter of the significant retrenchment in college endowments and uncertainty as national health reform proposals are debated in Washington. Government spending grew modestly in the first year of the past recoveries from recessions. This time, however, the outlook for government employment remains quite dim, as I think witnessed by the earlier panel, as federal, state, and city governments struggle with rather severe revenue shortfalls and budget issues. Professional and business services and leisure and hospitality have often increased employment in the first year of a recovery. However, the degree has been significantly less in the past two recoveries compared to the 1980s. The strength in these sectors this time around will depend on how quickly consumer and business confidence returns. Figure 10 highlights industries that have had more mixed results in the first year of a recovery and are uncertain this time as well. While construction employment will be restrained by low housing prices and elevated foreclosures, and commercial construction employment is restrained in many areas by falling commercial real estate prices and high vacancy rates, employment levels in these sectors have experienced such significant declines that we may still see some rebound. The behavior of the consumer will help determine employment in manufacturing and retail trade. It is unclear how willing consumers will be to increase spending once the government's various stimulus programs abate. If consumption is relatively restrained, as many expect, then these sectors are not likely to hire significantly until consumers become more confident. On the bright side, though, a potential upside to manufacturing employment is the strong growth occurring in some emerging economies and prevailing exchange rates that favor U.S. exports. To sum up my remarks and conclude, I think we can gain insights on this recovery from the experience and trends of the past. Certainly for economies that experience substantial financial shocks, recovery is normally quite slow. While inventory rebuilding will likely provide some spark, the strength of underlying demand as government stimulus subsides remains an open question. The employment picture overall has improved, and the outlook is certainly much brighter than 1 year ago. Layoffs are abating, though many firms are not yet ready to do new permanent hiring. Any significant hiring will likely have to wait while current labor resources are more fully utilized. So it appears that this recovery will likely experience only a slow improvement in the employment picture and that the unemployment rate will remain quite elevated during the early phases of the recovery. GDP growth is expected to be strong enough to produce some employment growth, but that rate of employment expansion will not likely be rapid enough to put a large dent in the unemployment rate. Our research and analysis at the Boston Fed suggests that with significant capacity in labor markets, wages and salaries, and the ability of businesses to increase prices are likely to be restrained, resulting in little immediate inflationary pressures, similar to Nick's forecast. In my view, this should allow for accommodative monetary policy to continue to support the economy until the underlying demand of consumers and businesses become more self-sustaining. Thank you again for inviting me to speak with you today. I do wish each of you solid improvements in your businesses in the year ahead and better economic times for all New Englanders as the recovery proceeds. Thank you very much, and I think I have time for one or two questions. Any questions? Yeah, in the back. Speak up, so it's a big room.
Difference now that anyone in this room, almost anyone in this room, can make a choice between hiring an employee here in Connecticut who will walk in the door and come to work versus outsourcing that work, particularly the manufacturing aspect, but not exclusively. We outsource a lot of the insurance work that used to be done here. And other means of refilling jobs, but not refilling them here in Connecticut, or in Boston, or anywhere else in New England. How are we taking that into account in terms of looking forward?
So the question was related to outsourcing and how it impacts our expectations for employment growth over the coming years. Outsourcing has been a trend that's been occurring for quite some time. It's a secular trend. If you look at the unemployment numbers, there's been a very rapid change over the period of the recession. So while you're right that there are some secular movements and outsourcing is one of the things that have been driving some of those secular movements, nonetheless, a lot of what's happening right now reflects the very slow growth that we've had over the last 2 years. So if we get to get employment growth to occur, we do need the economy to grow much faster. But you're right that we need to have a productive, well-educated labor force that makes people want to hire workers here and not to outsource it. While you're right that there has been a general trend towards outsourcing, I would say that I speak to an awful lot of companies that are thinking about bringing some of those services back. Whether you bring those services back depends partly on cost, partly depends on the kind of service you get, partly depends on how skilled the workforce is that you're able to get. So it's critically important that we continue to have a highly skilled workforce. We're not likely to be that competitive in very low-skilled, low-wage jobs, and so the economy has been over the last several decades making adjustments to that. And so it's all the more important that we make sure that our schools produce the kind of workforce that the United States is going to need going forward.
Thank you.
In the back there.
Why don't you wait a second? Just let the mic get over to you. Oh, sorry.
Comment, and that is that the long-term trend has been for total gross output for industry, that value-added or GDP has been shrinking as a share of that total output, and intermediate inputs have been increasing as a share, both nationally and from what I could estimate in the state, too. I had to back into it a little bit, and I also used some in-plan analysis, but I also used some of the claims data to back into it, too. But also what I wanted to comment on is, you know, you had mentioned the 80s. Recoveries have been stronger, you know, the 80s and the 70s. And besides the couple of obvious things that we know, you know, since 1971, you know, the collapse of Bretton Woods. And then this has been a recession that's been accompanied by a financial panic. When you look back through history, they're deeper, longer, and they're followed by weaker recoveries. But the comment I wanted to make also that we had in the 70s and the 80s is that we don't have now is whatever else it was, we had this gigantic public works program called the Cold War. And Reagan pumped $1 trillion into the economy during the 1980s to stimulate growth. I mean, we had a battle to get, you know, $700-800 billion. And even that, only $180 billion of that is direct spending on public works. So I think that that's an important factor into why we've had post-Cold War jobless recoveries and weaker recoveries than we had in the 1970s and 1980s. Would you like to comment on that?
So there are many factors that affect the speed of the recovery. As you noted, and I noted in my talk, when there are very severe financial disruptions, and this is probably the most severe financial disruption the United States has had since the Great Depression, it takes a long time to recover. And so I'm not expecting that what's happened in almost every economy that's had very severe financial shocks, it just takes a while to recover from those. So I'm certainly anticipating, and that's partly reflected in my remarks, that that is going to be something that's only going to be gradually overcome. I would say that we have taken extraordinary measures, both on the fiscal side and the monetary policy side, that I think have made the outcomes much less severe than they otherwise would have been. They certainly have not prevented a recession, and they haven't prevented a deep recession, but they have prevented what was a deep recession from getting much, much worse. So you can argue about some elements of the government stimulus package. It was a very substantial government stimulus package. And you can argue with some of the things the Federal Reserve has done, but certainly I think the accommodative monetary policy has helped us to get to a point where if you'd asked somebody last March where we were going to be today, I think very few economists would have said that the economy would be doing as well as it is, even though it's not where we want it to be. So I think that is a difference that Chairman Bernanke and this administration, the past administration, realized there were some serious issues that needed to be addressed. And fortunately, they took actions to try to make sure that it didn't get more severe than it was. We obviously have a long way to go. We obviously need to make adjustments so that we don't have this kind of financial shock in the future. But I do think that the fiscal and monetary stimulus has played a large role in preventing an outcome that could have been much worse. Yeah.
On monetary policy, since you were the lone dissenter, and obviously with the benefit of hindsight, it's been proved correct. We can't let you leave without getting your thoughts, on policy going forward. At least your thoughts.
So the question was my thoughts on monetary policy. I don't forecast monetary policy, but I will say that, as I highlighted in my remarks, the economy is still quite weak. An unemployment rate of 10% is much higher than we want. We do want growth that is more rapid than we're currently likely to expect. And so I think it's perfectly appropriate to keep monetary policy accommodative until we get enough growth, until the economy becomes more self-sustaining. Yeah. So the question on getting more local, what do I expect for Connecticut and New England? I think, as Nick highlighted in his remarks, this recession has been very bad for New England. It's not been nearly as bad in New England as it has been in the rest of the country. That's primarily related to a couple of things. One, I think our bankers did learn a lot from the early 1990s, and I think we didn't have the kind of speculative boom in commercial real estate and residential real estate that unfortunately occurred in other parts of the country. So if you look at places where the unemployment rate is greatest, it tends to be in places that had a big boom-bust cycle, places like Nevada and Florida and California come to mind. It's also places that were highly exposed to the auto industry. So if you look at the northern Midwest, they have very elevated unemployment rates as well. So fortunately, unlike the previous two recessions that were much more tied to the high-tech industry and commercial real estate in New England, where in some respects we were the epicenter of the problem, we're not the epicenter of the problem this time. So that's reflected in the fact that Connecticut's unemployment rate for November is 8.2%. The national unemployment rate is now 10%. It was 10.2%. So even though the economy is still quite weak and quite weak in New England, we are doing much better than the rest of the country. Our banks are in better shape than in much of the rest of the country. So while there are lending constraints here, I would say they're much less severe than they are in parts of the country where if you look at who the FDIC is closing on weekends, they tend to be banks that are located in Arizona, Nevada, Florida, and California. You don't hear of banks in New England having those kind of difficulties. So a lot of the problems are less severe here, which is not to minimize the extent of the problems that we nonetheless face in the New England economy. One last question. Yeah.
Stock market over the past year, recently, but either that or workers staying on longer because of the rising cost of education, and colleges are, you know, it's making people work longer so that the jobs aren't necessarily being reduced, it's just people are staying longer and not being replaced.
So there are certainly some people that are making deferral decisions for retirement, but if you look at people that have left the labor force, a lot of people have left the labor force in part because they haven't been able to find employment. And the payroll growth numbers indicate that a lot of people have actually lost jobs. It's not just that people haven't hired and replaced. So I think the last 2 years, a lot of it actually has been organizations downsizing because they have to downsize. But as you do point out, there are secular trends that do affect the labor force participation rate, and in particular, if your 401k has been depleted, you may put off retirement longer than you normally would. There are other demographic features, obviously, that have an impact overall. But I think most of the movement we've seen are much more tied to the current economic situation and less to those longer-run demographic changes. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the program this morning.